Welcome everybody to a Thursday edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, John Harris. Now, typically it's Mark Vandermeer driving on Thursday night in the general. Well, both of them decided that they were going to leave me solo. So I went out and I found, well, even better than Mark in the general, bringing in my good friend, DP Sitter. DP, good evening and thank you for joining me.
I cannot believe those are some really big shoes to fill, Johnny, but thank you for having me on a Thursday. I was like, it's not my day. Happy to do it. And I hope I live up to the expectations. I don't know if I can, but you know what? It's always fun to do radio with you. And it's been a while. It's been a minute since you and I did radio together. I think draft night was the last time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And we did a lot. We did a lot during
draft those three days.
Yeah. But it was so much fun. It was always a blast going through that. And of course, things were ever changing during the draft. So you never knew what was going to happen at some point. We're going to hear from Drew Doherty in our next segment as we go, where are they now with Steve McKinney? Yes, the skinny with Steve McKinney. And if you heard that song, then you probably know about my old radio station that used to play that all the time. So we'll have that a little later with the where are they now. But DP and I are going to kick it off. I call this a new segment. It's called Three from Deep. You know, like in basketball, you did three from deep. But this is a little different because it's going to be three topics on three different things from DP Sidhu. And DP, we're going to start with this one. Number one of the three. Three areas in which you feel most confident the Texans are definitely better than last year. Three from deep. Here we go.
Okay. This should be easy, right? Because Texans only won four games last year. So it's got to be better.
You think,
but the first one and the most glaring one, I have to say, is head coach.
Yep.
No disrespect to David Culley, who was wonderful and super sweet and came in at a really tough time in this organization.
Right.
But Lovie Smith taking over as head coach just feels different. And it doesn't, and I don't think I'm the only one that says that. I think everyone feels that way. I think the fans feel that way. I think his experience, and we saw what he was able to do with his defense last year. And he just commands a room when he talks. The players love him. We love him. And I feel like that is one of the areas that I'm very confident that we're better at, because he just has that head coaching experience. And there's just something about him that just seems very comforting when he's back there calling plays. And he's going to continue calling plays for defense, which is the one, I think, bright spot of last year. So confident in the head coach, in Lovie Smith, and the direction that he's going.
There are certain teams at certain times that could take on maybe an inexperienced or a younger coach. And there are times when that fits. There are times when a team probably needs a coach that's seen it, been there, done that. I think this team was definitely at that point. That's a good one. All right, DP, number two, area in which you feel most confident Texans are definitely better than last year.
I'm going to go secondary. This was an area of concern last year, and it didn't really seem like the Texans, I mean, first of all, we didn't have that much draft capital. Couldn't really address it in the draft. And then, you know, free agency, we signed a lot of different players, but I feel a lot more confident about it this year. I think bringing back Desmond King was huge. I love that move. I love what Desmond King brought to this defense last year. And I didn't think that the Texans were going to be able to bring him back this year, but they did. And then I think spending your first two of three draft picks on the backfield says a lot about your priorities and, you know, how important it is to improve back there. Lovie Smith said it. He said, can't get better as a team unless we get better at the cornerback position. And he basically put his money where his mouth is. I mean, you take Derek Stingley, number three overall, and then Jalen Petrie with, you know, your second round pick. You got better. You got better. You got younger. And then you bring in some veteran guys like Desmond King, who's had experience in this defense, and also Steven Nelson. Like, I'm curious to see what he does. Year eight, he's, you know, been a starter, what, in the last six of his seven NFL seasons. So you bring in some young talent, you bring in some veteran talent, you've got your leadership in Desmond King. I feel like the secondary is an area that I feel confident that we got better in this year, this offseason.
Okay, excellent. Number three, areas in which we feel most confident. Texans are definitely better than last year. Number one, Lovie Smith. Number two, secondary. Number three is?
I'm going to go the overall chemistry and identity of the team. I kind of struggle, and I wanted to say O-line. and I wanted to say run game, but those are the things that I was confident got better last year. So I am going to, I'm not saying that they won't be better, but maybe I'll just reserve the right to wait and see on that, because we've had some expectations for both of those areas in the last 2 years, but I am confident that the overall chemistry and identity of this team is more set, because I think last year we didn't really know what this team was going to be. We had all these street free agents that we signed, and these, you know, these players walking through the building. It was a total roster churn of new players, and we didn't really know what the identity was going to be with all these players. But this year you bring back the players that you like that performed well for you, and then you get a bunch of young players, and you've got Lovie Smith, who was here last year, and you have a sense of what Lovie Smith is about. So I feel like he can bring that locker room together, and I feel like he has brought that locker room together. He reached out to every single player when he was named head coach. So I feel really good about the chemistry of this team and this locker room and the identity. They know what they have to do to get better. The offense knows what it needs to do to get better. You bring back Pep Hamilton. So, you know, there's some continuity from last year. So you definitely can see some improvement. It's not so much newness as there was last year. So I'm excited to see that this year.
Very good. Okay. We're doing three from deep, three key topics that DP is opining on. The first one, as you just heard, is three areas in which she feels most confident Texans are definitely better than last year. Number two, here we go. Three opponent changes, personnel, coaching, whatever, that worry you the most of the 14 opponents the Texans play this year. Three opponent changes that worry you the most. DP, number one, go.
You know, it's funny because, like, in free agency, the AFC West was just like making all these big moves.
It's crazy.
And then they're like, could I just say like three AFC West teams? But I'm not going to do that. That would be very boring. But okay. I will say, I'll say week two at Denver facing Russell Wilson does worry me, because I feel like Denver, I mean, they won a Super Bowl the last time they had a quarterback, a bona fide quarterback. And I'm not saying Russell Wilson is Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning wasn't even Peyton Manning that year. So I feel like, what if that is all that they needed, and Russell Wilson injects just enough juice with all the, they've had a lot of high draft picks in the last few years. They've been building that offense. And if you just pluck Russell Wilson out of Seattle and throw him in the middle of that mix, what is that going to look like for the Broncos? So I'm intrigued. I'm worried, I guess you could say. Yeah. Not like we had a coach that used to say, I don't say the word worry. So I guess I'm
maybe worried.
I'm intrigued.
I'm
intrigued with what that team looks like.
Okay.
All right. I got to go another AFC West team. I'm going to say Vegas. I think Derek Carr and Davante Adams. It seems like Carr really wanted Adams. Adams really wanted Carr. And then plus you get Chandler Jones on defense. I feel like the Raiders made a lot of moves. Now they do have, you know, a brand new head coach, new GM. So maybe it takes a while for that chemistry with Josh McDaniels to come together, but you've got a veteran quarterback who, you know, when push comes to shove, like, he's got to prove himself at some point. So he's getting paid. I worry a little bit about Vegas. I wonder if things will turn around for them.
Okay.
And then
finally, your third one.
Finally, I'm not going to go AFC West. And I think within our division.
Oh, there you go. There you
opening the season and closing the season against the Colts. I worry that Matt Ryan is what the team needed, because he's the opposite of the last two quarterbacks the Colts had. You know, he's very accurate. I know he's up there in years. He's been around forever, but he's still really accurate. He throws a nice ball and he doesn't turn the ball over that much, which is like the one thing that really, you know, the Colts were snaked at the last 2 years with turnovers and interceptions. So I do wonder if Matt Ryan might be the solution that they needed, at least for the next year or two. Obviously he's not like a long-term solution because he's probably near the end of his career, but the Colts, I'm going to go within the division because I feel like that's always a tough battle for the Texans. Yep. It was even last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you put a more accurate passer back there. What's going to happen?
I was going to ask you if you didn't go in division, because I was thinking maybe you'd go back to the AFC West. The Chargers did bring in Khalil Mack.
They did. Yeah. I mean, they're all tough. They've all made a lot of big changes.
And I was going to say, if you didn't go in division, I was going to ask you, okay, which change or which addition worries you more? And you handled it, because I was going to say Matt Ryan at quarterback or Stephon Gilmore for the Colts at defensive back.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's going to be a big one on that side of the ball for them.
I mean, look, how much juice does he still have left?
That's a great, and that's the point.
Question.
If he's got 1 year, though, it's probably worth it. Even if it's just 1 year with that defense, the pressure that front can get, even if it's just 1 year, he's going to be able to benefit. And obviously, opposite Xavier Rhodes and what they've got there, a physical defense. I would still say Matt Ryan. I mean, look, it's a quarterback versus a defensive back. But just knowing that the Colts have struggled at that spot, I was thinking, you know, look, Stephon Gilmore might be a I don't say more significant, but relatively speaking, his impact is going to be pretty severe for the Colts. And that's not good news. I was going to ask you which quarterback along those same lines is going to have a bigger impact that was added to the division, Matt Ryan or Malik Willis in Tennessee. But
I don't know. I mean, I Malik know. Willis maybe later in the maybe season. Later. I mean, the Tannehill comments were very interesting. I feel like they might have been taken out of context and made into a bigger deal than they were. But I'm not sold on Malik Willis just yet.
Same,
you know. But yeah. I think Matt Ryan. I mean, I mean, we've seen what he can do, and he throws some really nice deep passes. And maybe that's he just needed a change of scenery. Who knows?
I think that's absolutely what Matt Ryan needed, and I think Indianapolis provides that for him. So I think Indianapolis could be scary. But man, if Matt Ryan struggles early, then oh boy, it gets kind of interesting. All right, doing three from deep with our good friend DP Sidhu. Our first topic was areas in which she felt Texans were most definitely better than last year. She was most confident Texans were better than last year. Three opponent additions that worried her the most. I would say Tyreek going to Miami because I think Miami.
That was my runner-up.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. That was, I mean, with Tyreek and Waddle and Gesicki, those three, man. If Tom Brady ended up going to Miami like had been rumored, my goodness. Okay, last one. Three players you're most excited about for the Texans in 2022. Any position, any level of experience. This is a rookies ROK zone, so you can bring up a rookie if you'd like. But three players you're most excited about for the Texans. Any position, any level of experience. Your number one player is?
I'm going to go Derek Stingley. Yeah. Super pumped. Yeah. So excited. I am one of those people that, I can't tap the brakes on the rookies. I'm like really excited. I'm the opposite of
like
that.
I am
so excited to see Derek Stingley. I haven't seen him since 2019. Yeah. The film looks incredible. He looks healthy. He looked phenomenal at his pro day. This is such a position of need. And, you know, can he just step in and make an immediate impact? He's covered NFL type receivers at the college level. So I'm excited to see what he does in this first game out there. I mean, there's some big receivers that are in the division that are in the AFC West. We've got all these like really tough receivers. And I think that this team is not going to say that he's going to be covering the number one receiver, but you know, at what point, you know, or will he this year show that that's something he's capable of? I mean, I cannot wait for that moment. So I'm super, super excited about Derek Stingley. I cannot even hide it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go another rookie, Damian Pierce, who also goes by DP. He told me he was DP. I was like, can I stop for a second?
That's the funniest way. And I heard that on the, I mean, look, once we get to Saturday and I mean, for those of you that night, I said this a million times, I was moving, I was selling my house, I was on fumes, and then I was doing all the streaming shows with you, then I was doing live radio. So by the time I got to Saturday, I was cooked. And so I was loopy, I was drinking super coffees with like 300 milligrams of caffeine to make it through. And I swear to you, I heard him say that, and I about fell out of my chair laughing. It was funny, but it was just the way he caught, it was just, it hit me at the right moment. It was like the perfect moment of levity. I can't wait. I've told you the UGG story about the combine, which was just phenomenal. I thought you would appreciate that.
He said that he could have cranked out a couple more if he would just worn proper tennis shoes.
Yeah.
But maybe I need to be OGDP because it might get confusing. You know,
it might be.
Like it might get confusing. He does go by DP. He introduced himself as DP. So this will be interesting. But I just love his energy. I love that, you know, we drafted a running back. This is, you know, the area that everybody has wanted to see improve in the last few years. And I'm not saying that he's like, you know, the next like all pro or anything like that, but I'm super excited to see what he does in this run game. I feel like he was underutilized at Florida from like everything that I'd read about him. So, you know, maybe he's got a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't seem like the type that, you know, doesn't want to be a team player, but I'm just excited for him in this opportunity and in this offense. I think he can make a really big impact. So I'm going to go. I had to go two rookies with my first two, but I will not go with a rookie for my third player that I'm most excited to see for the Texans this year. I'm going to go Brevin Jordan, who's in his second year.
All right.
Because I think that we saw he sat on the bench for what? How many? Seven, eight games?
Yeah.
Seven
games basically last year? The first half of the season. Roughly the first half.
Right. And then he got in and he killed it when he was out there. And this, we have no more Jordan Akins. Farrah Brown is getting older. You know, I think Brevin Jordan's kind of elevated himself to be that guy in this offense that with Pep Hamilton, it seems like tight ends are going to be have a bigger role. So I'm really excited to see with him not having to go through the whole, you know, learning everything your rookie year. He kind of he understands the playbook. He understands the terminology. But now he's in his second year. He can make that year one to year two jump and have a bigger role in this offense. Super excited to see what Brevin Jordan brings to the table.
You know, when we talked to him the night of the draft, and we had Brevin Jordan, we had Garrett Wallow.
Yeah.
He was so fun to talk to. I mean, obviously I caught up with him a couple times during the season, you know, post game. I think it was the Rams game that I had a chance to talk to him and interview him. And it was odd because I've never had a chance to interview rookies at all. And here I am getting Brevin Jordan. And he just was, he was a breath of fresh air. He's so excitable. He was honest, and that was hugely, I mean, I would say important, but it was cool to see this rookie that was, that impressive in some way, shape or form. I think if you asked me that same question about three players, I'm most excited about, if you went with rookies, like, I mean, I'm really excited about the, you know, the same guys you mentioned. I mean, Derek Stingley, Damian Pierce, when his name was called, we were in studio. And we're kind of waiting. We had seen a name pop up, and Tyler Milner was doing the show with us. And he was like, hey, the Texans are going to take a running back, but it's not the Aggie. And I was like, in my mind, kind of racing, like, okay, boy, Damian. And he goes, Damian Pierce. I went, oh, I jumped out of my chair, like, yes. So I'm excited for what he's able to bring. But I'm going to start right there with Marlon Mack. And I think it's more of intrigue for Marlon Mack than it is like, what has he got left? Because I know the Marlon Mack that I saw in 18-19, like, that dude was a badass. I mean, he was I'll never forget him as a rookie in 17 in that god-awful game at the end of the 2017 season when both the Colts and the Texans stink. And, I mean, if you go back and look at the rosters of those games and you're like, wait, these guys played in the NFL? And there's a run on our sideline and Mack pie-faces Jadeveon Clowney. And I'm like, I've never seen that before. And I thought, boy, this guy's got some. So if he's healthy, he becomes very, very intriguing in this whole entire mix. Now, the one rookie you didn't mention, I'm going to mention him. But again, it's more of an intrigue because I don't know, and we don't know when John Metchie is going to be available.
Ooh, yeah.
When Metchie becomes available, that is one obvious hurdle. The second part is when he's available, what do they do with him? And I say that not from a bad standpoint, like, well, I don't know if he's got a position. But I just don't know. Is he going to play in the slot? Is he going to line up in the backfield some? How are they going to get him the ball? What are they going to ask him to do? That, to me, becomes really intriguing because, you know, Nico's going to play on the outside. Brandon's going to do his thing inside, outside. But what they do with Metchie, where they line him up and how they use him becomes very, very intriguing to me from that particular standpoint. And the last one is sort of a nebulous one. And I'm taking a little bit of an assumption because I feel like the two starting tackles are Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. I feel like a starting guard will be Kenyon Green eventually. And I feel like the center is going to be Justin Britt, which leaves right guard. That position to me becomes more key. Obviously, you're going to have a rookie. He's going to make his mistakes, but he's also going to show, wow, he is a tremendous run blocker in particular. Tremendous strength and agility for a guy that size in Kenyon Green. But what do they do at right guard? That becomes really intriguing to me about who plays right guard. Is it AJ Cann? Does Max Sharping, with the way he finished 2021, has he gotten their attention? That battle, does Justin McCray move over to the right side and play right guard? How do they figure out that right guard position? And last and certainly not least, do they take a rookie like Austin Deculus and say, look, we like a lot about you, but tackle might not be it. Maybe you need to move into guard. So I'm really intrigued with how that fifth spot comes together. Now, there have been years where we're like, I don't know how any of this is going to come together, i.e. 2017 and 2018. All I know are one spot's going to be. I know two. I feel like four are fairly locked in. But that fifth spot, and I'm not, I mean, we can say it. Nick Cazario and Lovie Smith better not say it. But what that fifth spot is at right guard, who starts there, who's effective there. I just feel like this, the interior of the offensive line the last few years has not been up to par from guard to guard. I feel like it's underachieved. Now, part of that could have been scheme. Part of that could have been coaching. Part of that could have been, I don't know, all of the above.
Injuries, COVID.
Injuries. Yeah. Yes. COVID.
Combination.
Lack of confidence, which I think hit Max Sharping in 2020. I think he got it back in 2021. But who the right guard is gets me excited, because whoever's going to step in at that right guard spot will have won, I think, a pretty staunch competition. And from that standpoint, it's going to be the guy that probably, I'm not going to say that the other four are just going to like, hey, we're good, we're starters. That, I don't think that's it. But I think it's more that person is really going to have to shine to be able to take that spot. And look, injuries might change. It might be a guy for 8 weeks, might be another guy for 9 weeks. But the one thing we've been unable to do is have consistency, first of all, in appearance and availability. Last year, I think we were 31st or 32nd in the league with lost starts with our starting offensive line. Having lost Laramie and then Marcus Cannon for the number of games we did, and then other guys missed games for different reasons in between. It was just, but if this guy, if the line can stay healthy and that right guard can step up and play well, then to your point about Damian Pierce, my point about Marlon Mack, those guys start running behind an offensive line that gets movement, that gets guys and gets running backs into gaps quickly. That ends up changing this run game and changing it significantly. So that's going to be very, very fun and exciting. And deepy, three from deep. I love it.
I love it too. Let's do it again sometime.
To do this. I'll come up with different topics and we will try and do this as much as we can throughout the offseason onto the season. That was a very, very fun segment. Thank you so much for joining me.
All right. It was good doing radio with you, Johnny. Like, let's not wait like 2 months next time.
Yeah.
Well, it's only been a month since the draft.
Well, I'm going to go shut the door and keep Mark Vandermeer locked out. And then you have to do more radio together. We'll see.
And the general too. You got to tackle both of them.
Well, DP can do it better. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, the general's apparently retired, but not from radio. So we'll
he's awful at being retired. He's terrible.
He is very awful at being retired. But a guy who is not awful at being retired is Steve McKinney. Drew Doherty had a chance to catch up with him with a Where Are They Now? And that's next on Texans All Access. Welcome back to this Thursday edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter, flying solo. No McClain, no Vandermeer tonight. They're off doing other things, I shall say. But DP City was great in the first segment. Andrew Doherty is awesome in this segment, doing a Where Are They Now? One of my favorite Texans, one of the first ones I got to know in the locker room, from Centerville, from Clear Lake, from Texas A&M, played for the Texans. My man, Steve McKinney. Drew, take it away.
Well, this is a fun one because we've got an OG, literally, figuratively, but we got Steve McKinney, offensive guard, offensive lineman, original Tex. I mean, all these things that you can say, but Steve, you played for the team 2002 to 2007. You'd already been in the league for 4 years prior with the Indianapolis Colts, and we're going to get into that. But first things first, how are you doing and where are you these days? What's going on?
Well, I'm doing great. First of all, you know, post COVID life is much better. And
yeah,
you know, I've been doing McDonald's now for about 12 years since I got out of football. So that's pretty much all I do, man. I do McDonald's and help my son train to be where I'm at one day.
And how's that going?
It's going pretty good. You know, he's only in eighth grade, but you know, he has the desire and the work ethic. So, you know, the rest is in God's hands, I guess.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You're born in Galveston. You went and played your high school ball at Clear Lake. Where are you these days specifically? Where are you living?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I live in Montgomery, actually. Okay. Moved out to Montgomery. I you know, went to high school in Clear Lake, Centerville prior to that, actually. Small town.
How about that?
And then, you know, when I was playing with the Texans, we lived over in Friendswood. Mm-hmm. Mostly because it was an area I was familiar with, having, you know, grown up in Clear Lake. And yeah, we moved out to Montgomery, man, right after I got done playing. I bought the McDonald's down there in Madisonville back in 2010, and couldn't be driving from Friendswood to Madisonville every day, so we moved out to Montgomery, which is only about an hour away. you know, that's how we ended up there, planted roots, and it's been good. You know, it's a nice community, you know, good people. So
on the edge of the Piney Woods. And I, you know, I went to school in Dallas for a bit and lived in Dallas for a bit. So I guarantee I stopped at that, McDonald's in Madisonville a time or two. And Spilaz, I think you got one in Huntsville too, right? Am I well, remembering that?
That one's not mine.
No. Yet. Okay. Sorry.
One of these days, hopefully I'll get that one. But, yeah, we got the one in Madisonville, and then I got, you know, a few in Montgomery area and kind of all over Houston at this point. We're pretty spread out.
That's fantastic. How did you get into that? Because obviously you're in the NFL for a decade basically. Yeah. And how do you transition from playing football to being a franchisee?
Well, I learned literally in my rookie year up in Indianapolis, that NFL stands for not for long and that you better have a second career planned out before that day comes. And so I started researching, you know, businesses and franchises and things that I could get into, from, you know, dry cleaners to hair salons to Subways or whatever. And McDonald's was always one of my first, but I looked into them pretty quickly and realized that if you're not 100% involved in the day-to-day and running the business yourself, that they're not going to let you get in. So I waited. And then the day after I retired, or was retired, you know, because most of us don't retire, we just get retired.
Yeah.
So that when that day came, that was the first place I applied for, and actually got rejected, and waited a few months and applied again, got rejected, waited a few months and applied again after meeting with a gentleman that I knew from A&M that used to own some McDonald's. And so, you know, he kind of opened the door, Ron Blatchley. He opened the door for me to get an interview, and I flew out to Arizona, met with the West Division president, you know, me and my wife, Tiffany, and just really sold him on the fact that, hey, I'm not looking to be an investor. I'm not looking to, you know, put my money someplace safe. You know, I want to run it. I want to be involved. I want to do whatever it takes to own and run a McDonald's. And, you know, was able to get in the program, and took me about a year and a half, Drew. It's a brutal program.
Yeah.
But they train you top to bottom, man. You learn how to do everything in a restaurant, which is great, because I didn't know how to do any of it. I knew how to snap a football and, you know, block defensive linemen. But, you know, when it came to running a restaurant operationally and in the business side of it, you know, I was clueless. So it was a great training program. I learned a lot. Very humbling, I'm not going to lie, you know, because you work in the restaurant, you know, you're putting on a crew uniform, you're taking orders in the drive-thru, you're making French fries and hamburgers and dealing with upset customers and everything that goes into working in fast food. And I remember one time a guy came through, it was right after I'd just finished playing, and I was in the drive-thru over at the Fairmont McDonald's right there off 45 and Beltway 8. And he worked at Fox News actually, and was a guy that, you know, I'd been a cameraman and interviewed me and stuff like that in the past. He looked at me like, man, you know, you've really fallen on some hard times, haven't you?
If you only knew though, right?
And so I said, no, and I'm in the training program, you know, I'm trying to own one of these one day. So, but it was funny, because I would get those looks from customers from time to time, you know, that really followed the Texans and knew who I was, and they'd look at me and double take, like, wait, what are you doing here? And It was very humbling at times, but man, it's been worth it. You know, it's paid off, been a blessing to me and my family. So we love McDonald's.
That's great. I don't know much about that end of the business, but I've heard stories like yours. Like when you become a franchisee, especially with them, it's a pretty, like you said, grueling process. Now I do know I waited tables at the Mason Jar in Houston for two summers. And back then when I was more of a jackass, I thought this was like overwhelming. So I just, like, that small portion of the food service industry, I have a lot of respect for. So I can't imagine having to run the entire thing. And was there a moment, you talk about some of the folks seeing you in the drive-thru, but was there another moment where you said humbling that really, where you were just like, what the absolute hell am I doing this for? Like, surely that came up a time or two, right?
Oh man, it did. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I mean, when you're doing that for a year plus, and you're not getting paid, right? This is all right. For free and for, you know, it's training. You're getting paid through the training. But there were plenty of times, you know, where I'm working a, you know, late night shift, and you know, it's 10, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm walking around the parking lot, you know, picking up pieces of trash here and there, and you know, getting home and barely seeing my family and stuff like that. And there was times where I was like, man, is this really worth it? You know, this is a lot. You know, here, there's probably other things I could be doing. You know, I could go get a job and work for a big company or something, you know, work my way up the ladder, you know. So there were moments where I had those thoughts, you know, but I just kept pressing through. My wife just kept pushing me. And, you know, because everybody has those weak moments, everybody, when things get tough, you know, you question things, but I powered through it. And, you know, thank God I did, you know, because there was a light at the end of the tunnel. And there's times throughout that training where you can't see that light. You have no idea how much longer you have. There's no, hey, you know, step one, two, three, and you're finished at this date. There is none of that. You know, you're kind of at their mercy as you're going through this training. So there was months where I was just clueless as to when this would ever end, and, you know, very challenged mentally and physically. But I persevered, you know, and I think the NFL and football and all my training really helped me with that.
Yeah.
That mental toughness aspect of it, of just grinding through it and just embracing the grind and just pushing through the tough times.
Yeah. If you can make it through a training camp in Houston or, you know, summer drills in College Station, you can definitely make it through that. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your days as an Aggie. You know, I'm sort of around your age. Graduated high school in 96. So I remember the Aggies were bullies, man, in the mid 90s, early 90s, yeah. Late 80s, still at the end of the Southwest Conference. And you're kind of there as they switch over into the Big 12. You were there with RC Slocum, who, holy moly, mm-hmm. that guy can coach. And what was it like going to Texas A&M when they were at that, you know, at the peak of those powers, I guess you could say?
Andrew, for me, it was just kind of like a dream come true, because I grew up from the age of 1 through 16 in Centerville, Texas, about an hour from College Station.
Yep.
My grandfather went to A&M. We were big Aggies growing up. We'd go to like games every Saturday. Probably made it the most home games growing up. So I just had I bled maroon, bottom line. You know, I was a big A&M fan from birth. So for me, I remember it kind of – the light switch kind of went on in about seventh grade. I remember – because up until that point, Drew, I just wanted to be in the band. I just wanted to play trombone or tuba or something in the band, you know, because I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Right.
Didn't really think a kid out of Centerville, you know, could ever actually step on the Kyle Field in a uniform and play football. So, but I remember in seventh grade, I was watching A&M play Hawaii on their opening game. And that's when it just really clicked in my head. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play football at A&M. And that, from that day on, that became my goal. And I worked towards that. And my junior year, after my junior year, but right before my senior year, it was back in those days, colleges couldn't call you. And they called me on the day that they were allowed to call me at midnight. A&M called me. And they didn't offer me at that time. I was hoping they would, but they didn't offer me. But the fact that they had called me, they were my first call, you know, made me feel good and felt like I had a chance. And then I think it was, you know, probably a week or two later, you know, some of these other big schools had started offering scholarships. And then sure enough, here comes the A&M offer. And, you know, I jumped right on it. And I'm not going to say that I was like any 18-year-old, you get confused, right? So I committed to A&M. And, you know, a couple months later, you know, Notre Dame's pushing hard for me. And wow. This was
Lou Holtz.
Notre Dame was a bunch of bullies too. You know, they were ranked number one in the country all season. That was the year they lost to Boston College on that last second field goal.
The Rudy year, yeah. They had just beaten Florida State, number one, the week before.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I was, you know, Rudy had just come out in the theaters, you know, like, dude, you know, I went up there on a visit and saw Touchdown Jesus and met the actual Rudy. And I'm like, how can I not go to Notre Dame? You know, this is crazy, you know? And so I ended up committing to Notre Dame. After growing up an Aggie my entire life, you know, my parents were like, yeah, they were trying to be supportive, but I think they were kind of, you know, a little heartbroken inside. You know, they didn't really share that with me, but luckily I'm sitting there watching A&M and Notre Dame played in the Cotton Bowl that year.
Hell of a game.
And I was committed to Notre Dame during that game, by the way, but I was rooting for A&M for some reason. And that's kind of what, you know, made me realize that, you know, I got to go where my heart's at. You know, yeah, Notre Dame may be the cool new shiny object that, you know, makes me look cool to everybody. But the reality is that A&M was where my heart was. And so I realized it watching that football game, and A&M lost, and I still wanted to go there. So I did end up committing to A&M and signing there, thank God. And it was fun, man. I had a great experience at A&M. It was a dream come true, running out on Kyle Field. You know, even to this day, I go back to games and just love the atmosphere, love the community, love the university. So
yeah. Fun place with, you know, so many fun traditions, and they got something building now too with Jimbo Fisher. There was like a hook and ladder to Leland McElroy that didn't almost, what was that? Is that how that ended?
That's how that ended. It was set up beautifully. And unfortunately the guy that caught the ball that was supposed to throw the hook, got hit as he was throwing it. So he just kind of threw it off and he missed it. But if he'd have caught it in stride, he'd have been gone. So that was a pretty exciting game.
Kids, if you don't know who Leland McElroy is, think like Tyreek Hill or Reggie Bush, kind of like that. I mean, that guy was electric.
Yeah, he was so fast. I remember watching him in the offseason. We'd run 40s, right? And they'd have these electronic timers or whatever. You know, electronic start, electronic finish. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to make you slow when you do that. And I'd never seen anybody run that fast. I think he ran like a 4.31 or something on that. And I was just like, goodness. I mean, you could hear it. It's like just whoosh,
yeah. Just fly. And he had the football moves to match it too. He wasn't just a fast, like he was a good football player.
He was quick, but his straight line speed was just unbelievable.
So as somebody who grew up around these parts, you know, Centerville, Clear Lake, all that stuff, and you're in the NFL and you're still early in your NFL career, how much did you notice when you saw a businessman from Houston named Bob McNair, you know, acquired the rights and, hey, Houston is going to get a franchise. The Oilers left while you were in college, but how much were you paying attention to that and cognizant of that?
I was probably paying attention to it more than anybody
really
in the whole country. Because I knew the second they got, I knew exactly who Bob McNair was. I knew the second he got the franchise, and I knew the second they were going to play in the year 2002. And just so happens that was the same season I was going to be an unrestricted free agent.
And were you lining that up in your mind in 1999 when it got? Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I was like,
wow.
You know, I was drafted in 98.
Right.
You know, I knew that the Colts at the most had 4 years of my rights, unless they put the franchise tag on me, which, you know, I wouldn't expect them to do that to a left guard at the time. But as soon as I saw 99 there, you know, first year is going to be 2002. I'm like, I'm going to be an unrestricted free agent, most likely. And, you know, so that was always kind of in the back of my mind. I'm like, unless Indianapolis like really just, you know, backs up a Brinks truck, you know, that's going to be my first priority, is trying to get to Houston. So when I did become an unrestricted free agent, I had some other offers, you know, I had a few other teams that were on me. But Houston was our first call. Mm-hmm. I told my agent, I said, just get me the best deal you can get me in Houston. That's where I want to be. You know, if they don't want me, or, you know, they're not willing to, you know, pay close to what other people are playing, then we can talk. But I said, anything close, anything even in the ballpark of what anybody else is offering, Houston's where I want to end up. So he knew that. And, you know, obviously the rest is history, because it all worked out. You know, this is where I want to be. This is home. You know, win or lose, you know, I knew it would be tough sledding in the beginning, but at the end of the day, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, Houston's home, and getting to play for your hometown team, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. There's nothing like it.
What was it like? Because the expansion draft, you're a free agent, so you were outside of that expansion draft. A lot of those guys came in, and they really went defense heavy. And that was a good defense those first few years you were with the Texans. Really, really good defense. And there were really good veterans on that team. Mm-hmm. What was that like, you know, being in the locker room with those vets, but also having a lot of young guys and a lot of guys who are sort of on the fringes of the NFL because of, you know, you're an expansion team. What was that like being in that soup of people, that gumbo of people, and trying to figure out, hey, this is what we got to do? Because you talked earlier about you got to practice 100% and you'll see the improvement. I don't imagine that everyone had that same mindset just because they hadn't experienced that like you. What was that like?
No, you're right, Drew. I mean, it was different because I went from being, you know, when you're in Indianapolis, you know, I'm second, third, fourth year player. Yeah, I guess you're a veteran, but you're not really quite a, you know, one of the top team leaders. You know, I'm on a team with, you know, guys that have been in the league 8, 9, 10, 12 years all over the place, mm-hmm. right? And you go to Houston and you look around the locker room and you're like, holy crap, you know, I'm one of the oldest guys in here.
I've talked to Steve about that very thing, going to the locker room and seeing the young guys. And all of a sudden you went from being a young guy to a cagey vet almost overnight. Fun stuff. There's a lot more to that interview. So go check out the podcast page, Houston Texans app, HoustonTexans.com, and listen to that full Where Are They Now, Steve McKinney. It is absolutely awesome. We talked about Peyton Manning being with the Colts. That was pretty cool as well. So go check it out, even though we hate the Colts, but so be it. It's Steve McKinney. We love him, and we love going around the NFL. We'll do that next right here on Texans All Access. Texans All Access. Texans All Access. We got one final segment of this Thursday edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, Sean Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. Glad to be with you, and a big tip of the cap to DP and Drew for joining me tonight. The Where Are They Now with Steve McKinney, you just heard, was fantastic. And then we did three from deep, which was fun. Gave DP three different topics. She gave me three thoughts on each. So three from deep, I love it. It's just, it works perfectly, you know, play on words, and it's great. And, of course, I love talking about Damian Pierce, DP, and DP. It's pretty funny. So that said, two rookies tonight as we go around the NFL. We'll be throwing out the first pitch over at the Houston Astros game tonight. In fact, probably right about now, you got Derek Stingley Jr., Kenyon Green throwing out the first pitch over at the Astros game. Congratulations. I've always wanted to throw out the first pitch. I've always wanted to get up on a mound and just throw a heater. I love throwing. I always love playing baseball. Love playing catch. Love to warm up a little bit and then hop up on the mound. Astros, if you're listening, give me a call. I would love to be able to do that. The only real news that came out of the NFL today that I really could see was a Raven retired. And I know it's not typically, you know, when a punter retires, it's not a huge deal. But Sam Cook for the Ravens was one of the best of all time. He was one of the more creative punters. He was doing things about 8-10 years ago. I remember seeing an NFL Films Presents on like the 17 or 18 different punts that he had. And he retired today, and it was interesting because it happened to pop up on my timeline, and John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta were talking about him, and it was just really interesting to see the reverence with which they were talking about him. It was really pretty cool, kind of the tip of the cap to Sam Cook, a great punter. Obviously, the Texans had their own Shane Leckler a few years ago, so we know having great punters, and of course, we have Cam Johnston now, so we've got a great punter in-house with the Texans. All right, that's going to do it. A big thanks to DP, to Drew, to Chris Santiago, to all you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. And as always, go Texans.